This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Final hour of power coming up here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. It's the youngest in charge, Lynnell Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock. Appreciate our guy Chris Russell joining us in the last segment. Always good catching up with our guy, the Rooster. Talking all things Washington Commanders as we get geared up for the all-important, pivotal NFL offseason that is ahead for our Local 53. A lot of big-time decisions to be made. And quite frankly, the decisions they make this offseason, and I'm not giving away state secrets here when I say this, the decisions that they make this offseason are going to have a significant impact on the future of this franchise moving forward. They have to establish, when I say they, I mean the Commanders, they must establish the core of this roster. They've got to get younger. They've got to get more talented. The good thing about it, and I laugh about it all the time, the football gods have looked out for the Washington Commanders because all of their needs that they have, they can fill via free agency and the draft without going for broke. That's the interesting thing here. I know people see now that the salary cap has been adjusted, there's $82 million for Washington to spend this offseason, and they've got 29 unrestricted free agents. How do they go about retooling the roster? What is the method to Adam Peters' madness heading into this offseason? They got a lot of choices to make. And I'm trying to figure out here, as we get closer and closer to the start of the draft, next week is the NFL scouting combine. This thing is moving at a rapid pace. The thing I begin to think about is, we've talked about the overall philosophy, right? I continue to believe they've got to attack the trenches hard on the offensive line, on the defensive line. And you don't have to go for broke doing that. The one high-priced free agent offensive lineman that I'd be after if I was Washington is Trey Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs. Trey Smith, 25 years old, 6'6", 320 pounds, former sixth-round pick of the Kansas City Chiefs. He has turned in to an absolute man-child in the middle of their offensive line. And he's someone that I think is a plug-and-play starter here for Washington and would give them an immediate upgrade at both guard spots. I think you bring in Trey Smith and he's automatically your best offensive lineman. Better than Sam Cosmi, better than Tyler Biadasz. So I would be damn sure intrigued by bringing him in. Now, look, he is going to, that's the thing about the free agents, he is going to most likely reset the guard market potentially. I'm just not sure what that actually looks like. Now, I'd have to think that he is going to get somewhere north of $20 million annually. Marcus Mosher of the 33rd team is projecting that Trey Smith is going to get 4 years for $84 million. Now, I'm no math whiz, but I'm going to do some math on the fly here via the calculator app on the iPhone. 84 divided by 4, it's $21 million on average. I should have known that off the top of my head, probably. It's not very hard math.
That's a pretty easy one there, Linnell.
It's pretty easy. Well, look. Yeah, be easy. But no, that's $21 million on average. How much of that ultimately is guaranteed, I'm not really sure on that. But if you're Washington and you've got $82 million in cap space and you use 21 of it on Trey Smith, you're now sitting with what? $63 million in cap space? That ain't bad. That ain't bad. You can re-sign your own free agent, say that eats up about $20 million. You're now $43 million in space. So it gets interesting, man. They're going to have to be very smart in terms of how they maneuver all this salary cap space that they have. And I know there is a way for them to increase the amount of cap that they have by moving on from John Allen. And I think a caller, I think it was Anthony in D.C. earlier said this. I feel like when it comes to John Allen, I don't want to just move off of good football players. So, yes, I understand parting ways with John Allen would give you cap relief. But I don't want to just give away a good football player. And I think John Allen is still amongst the better defensive tackles in the National Football League. I don't think he's worth top-of-the-market money, but I do still think he can play with the best, though. Obviously, you want to create cap space, obviously, right? But not at the expense of giving away good football players. Maybe a restructure is maybe the more appropriate route that you go with a guy like a John Allen. But if you have to part ways with him, I'm not sure if that's what I'd be interested in. I like John Allen. I don't like him at the cap number he's currently at, but I like John Allen. I think you got to find a way to bring him back. If in reality, right, if you run it back with John Allen and Deron Payne and you add two more rotational pieces, one of which I think has to be a space-eating, double-team-eating type of defensive tackle, that to me makes sense here. Makes a hell of a lot of sense. The more and more we get closer to free agency and we think about the amount of money and capital Washington has, I begin to hesitate or get cold feet on making the big-time swing splash move. And I know Myles Garrett, T. Higgins is what a lot of folks continue to talk about. I am, and I've said it from the moment he became available, quote-unquote, I'm in on Myles Garrett. The cost to me is just the talking point. Like, that's what I would really have to think about is, well, how much is it going to cost to get Myles Garrett? And then the other thing relative to Myles Garrett that I don't think we discuss enough here, Andrew Berry and the Cleveland Browns are playing hardball. I talked to a respected NFL source earlier today that said he thinks the Myles Garrett saga potentially leaks into the start of training camp. They don't want to move on from him. He has requested a trade. Doesn't mean they have to honor said trade request. If you've got to wait all the way until July to potentially get an answer on Myles Garrett, is the juice worth the squeeze? 1-800-636-1067. That's how we'll begin the segue of this conversation. I do want to get into Myles Garrett because I feel like he is someone that Washington fans are interested in. He's someone that I'm interested in. I just wonder at what cost. And what I just mentioned, respected NFL insider earlier today in a phone conversation told me that he expects the Myles Garrett saga to potentially leak into training camp. Does that change whether or not you'd be in on trading for Myles Garrett? 1-800-636-1067. Matthew is in D.C. What's going on, Matthew?
Hey, Linnell, thank you for talking about the subject because I think you're right. This is the most important offseason of the rebuild, and it has to do with something you were talking about a moment ago, which was the speed at which this is all moving.
Yeah.
There's a huge momentum behind the Commanders right now. There's a large mass of us fans, and you know from working as a lineman and you're out in the field and you're pushing the sled, if you get it moving fast quickly at the beginning, that's great if you can keep the momentum up. But if you hit a tough patch, the sled goes dead and you fall on your ass.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this offseason is about. It's about keeping that momentum and not hitting any dry patches. So if they take a big swing and they miss, that could be very problematic and it could raise a red flag. So that's one reason why they may be keeping things that they're working on for Myles Garrett and others very close to the vest because they simply do not want to take a swing and miss.
Matthew, I'll even take it a step further. You remember last year with this group, like that's how they move. They kept everything close to the vest. They weren't, you know, leaking out information to insiders. So, like, that is the new way of life for this regime. And I think you're right. It is about capitalizing. It's about seizing the opportunity and the momentum moving forward, Matthew. I appreciate you as always, brother, man. Hope you have a great rest of the night. 1-800-636-1067. Yeah, like, to me, though, man, like, I'm open to a lot of different things. And I think as a fan, you got to be open to a lot of different things because we're at that point in the offseason where there's so many different ways that they ultimately could go. Like, that's how I look at this thing. It's not that there's so many different ways that they can go in terms of how they choose to address it. We know what the holes are. How they choose to prioritize them is one thing, and then the order in which they fill those holes is another. Because here's the thing about the NFL offseason calendar. The draft is after free agency. And I think their draft plan is going to be dependent upon how free agency works for them. And like I said, free agency for them, I would have to think free agency for them is an area in a time period where they can get better, giving out some second-tier, third-tier level contracts. I don't know if there's anybody out there in free agency that I'd be willing to break the bank on. I mentioned Trey Smith, the guard from Kansas City. 6'6", 320, but he's had a history of blood clots. So there's a reason like Kansas City is potentially going to let him hit the open market. Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore. This past year, right, 92.5 pass block win rate. But when you look at the amount of games he's missed over the past several years, it's a risk if you go throw big money at somebody like that. But with Ronnie Stanley, it may be a risk I'm willing to take. Let's go to Ray in Baltimore. What's going on, Ray? You know about Ronnie Stanley.
Yeah, you can take that risk if you want to. The turnstile.
Oh.
And the thing is, man, like, you know, he hasn't played at an all-pro level in a couple of years. I mean, he came in because EDC made it an incentive-laden, contract, and he played for it. So we'll see. I believe that Baltimore should just move on and just, you know, go with someone else and develop them. You know what I mean? And, you know, put focus on other places. But what I will say real quick, man, the Myles Garrett situation, I remember, and you remember, the whole Khalil Mack saga with the Raiders.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, Khalil Mack wanted to be more than all of a sudden, the Bears kind of set the standard on, you know, what's going to take to get that kind of play. So we'll see what happens. But I'm going to say this, as far as the Commanders and as far as the future, now, I remember as a kid, 1992-93, Reggie White going into free agency when free agency was just becoming a thing in the NFL. How, franchise-altering that deal was when he left Philly. So why not take a swing?
I hear it.
You got the quarterback. You got the quarterback, man. And I know last week I mentioned T. Higgins and everybody got, you know, themselves in a bunch. But I'm telling you, Myles Garrett, he's the one. You know what I mean? Like, you can't go wrong with it. But if they don't do it, I got trust in Adam Peters that they're going to make the slick moves that need to be made. But I want my Myles Garrett. What say you?
For sure, Ray. I appreciate you as always. Yeah, like, I think my tone on Myles Garrett has altered and shifted throughout the offseason at this point. Now that I have the information that I have that this may drag out near training camp, you can call me scary, but there's a hesitancy that I now have because I want answers and I want to know what we're going to throw out there right away. I don't want to wait till training camp for something like that. We'll see ultimately how this thing plays out, but I'm ready for it. I just know this. There are a lot of tough decisions to be made, and it's one of those off seasons for your front office, rather, where your reputation's on the line. How the fan base views you moving forward is at stake here. Yeah, you hit on the slam dunk quarterback in year one. That's most important. But in reality, I could have drafted Jaden Daniels. He was the clear-cut.
You wanted Caleb.
He was the clear-cut number two quarterback in the draft. Once Caleb was selected.
You wanted to trade up for him. I did shows with you where you wanted to trade up for Caleb Williams.
It was very obvious who was available and who the pick should have been at two. That's just completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. I could have drafted Jaden Daniels. How do you make, what moves do you make in between the margins to support Jaden Daniels? That's the question. 1-800-636-1067. We'll begin talking about the NFL draft a little bit coming up next. My pal JP Acosta of SB Nation is going to join us here in the 9 o'clock hour as well. All that and more next on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1-800-636-1067, the number. MGM National Harbor Lister Lines. Youngest of Charles and O. Willingham with it for another half hour. JP Acosta of SB Nation. Now join us here momentarily as we talk all things NFL draft and the way the draft is set up this year. There's been so much commentary about, this isn't really a good class. It's not a very good draft. They're on a lot of first-round grades. Look, this isn't a good draft for television. This is a good draft if you're trying to build a winning football team, right? If you're trying to build a sustained winner over the course of 5 to 7 years, this draft is loaded. Because when you think about the teams that were in the Final Four, you think about the teams that are perennial playoff contenders, what do they all have in common? They are stout on the offensive line as well as the defensive line. Philadelphia, 3 Super Bowl appearances in the last 8 years. Why? Not because of A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, not because of Saquon Barkley, but because of the investment that they continuously, year in and year out, make in the trenches, along the offensive line and the defensive line. Buffalo, been in the AFC Championship 3 out of the last 5 years. Why? Not because Stephon Diggs. Not because of James Cook, but because they have invested, Brandon Bean and company have invested major resources on the offensive line and the defensive line. And in this draft, the football guys, I keep saying it, they are on Washington's side after not being for 30-plus years. All of the needs that the Commanders have up front, they can address in the draft and free agency, specifically along the defensive line. Over the past 5 years, an average of 9 defensive tackles are drafted in rounds 1 through 3. Over the past 5 years, an average of 9 defensive tackles get drafted in the first 3 rounds. Longtime NFL insider that covers the draft pretty regularly, Todd McShay, has 17 this year with a 1 through 3 grade when it comes to the interior of the defensive line. So it is a rich group in the trenches where it matters. I don't know necessarily if you are Washington. I don't know what you do first. That's my kind of thing here. I love the way the NFL calendar is. I hate the way the NFL calendar is. Because having the draft after free agency is kind of backwards to me. Because there's an order in the draft. And there's sort of limitations as to how you can improve. And free agency, if it was the other way around, and you drafted and then you went out and filled your holes in free agency after the draft, I'd like it more that way. But the way that it's currently set up, you got to double down on a couple of positions. That's what we were talking about with Chris Russell in the 8 o'clock hour. Like, if you go out and sign, I'm going to give names here. They're going to rub people the wrong way. I already know how it is. Let's say you don't try to break the bank on the edge. Let's say you go with the combination of, like, I know you all are waiting, Chase Young. You damn right. I'm kidding. But no, it would be a guy that I would be willing to take a flyer on when it comes to being a rotational piece here. And then it doesn't mean I don't go out and draft the defensive end as well. Like, that's just the way that this works. Like, the free agent class at edge rusher is not rich. It's just not. There aren't a lot of high-end guys. So my thought process here is you go with 3 or 4 guys on the edge. Maybe 3 is probably the more realistic number. And then you go out in free agents, you go out in the draft and you add guys as well. A couple of guys that have, like, familiarity here with this staff. Older, injury history, but willing to take a flyer on as a rotational piece. DeMarcus Lawrence, formerly of the Dallas Cowboys, hadn't played a lot over the past couple of years. Only played 4 games last year. So he, to me, is someone that I would take a flyer on. Liz Frank injury last year cost him. Azeez Ojulari from the Giants, someone that is stout against the run and can play on the edge. Chase Young is someone that I would think about bringing in. Baron Browning out in Arizona, someone that's a real defensive end that I'd bring in here. Like, but notice I'm not talking. I haven't mentioned Khalil Mack. I haven't mentioned Josh Sweat, the guys that are at the top of the market in this class. I'm going bargain bin shopping because in the draft, I know I'm doubling down. Bunch of different ways to look at it here, man. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll get more into the draft coming up on the other side of the break when we're joined by JP Acosta of SB Nation.
Hey,
get hot and heavy into the National Football League draft, the scouting combine coming up next week in Indianapolis. I feel like we'll have a lot more insight after next week in Indy. Guys are going to be talking. GMs, execs, coaches, and you'll start to see the mock drafts begin to file themselves out as well. Mock draft season is always the best to me. I really enjoy Daniel Jeremiah's work of the NFL Network. He, to me, is like mine. If we had tiers of draft gurus, color me the biggest Daniel Jeremiah stan. I love his work on the draft. Todd McShay is no longer with ESPN. He's now with The Ringer, but I'm a fan of Todd McShay's work. Referenced some numbers given to us by Todd McShay earlier in the show. It's going to be fascinating to see, man, how this draft ultimately shakes out. We were talking about it in the last segment. If you're a team that's trying to get better in the trenches, which all teams should try to be get better in the trenches, this is the draft and offseason for you, specifically in the draft. I wonder how many starting defensive tackles we see drafted in the first four rounds of this class. Because that's where the meat of the group is, according to everybody that you talk to surrounding the NFL draft. It makes me almost wonder, like, if you're Washington, how do you play it? Because I continue to believe, like, we saw it last year, how many different interior guys played. John Allen, Deron Payne, Johnny Newton, Shelton Day. Like, ideally, you want to have four legit dudes that you're able to count on in your defensive line rotation on the interior. Because of the simple fact that, like, they can't play every snap. And you don't want there to be some type of significant drop-off. What Washington's defensive front is missing, though, I feel like they have a bunch of three techniques, right? Like, John Allen is the closest thing I would say they have to a nose from just a size standpoint. Maybe Shelton Day. But, like, Deron Payne, three technique all day long. Johnny Newton, a three technique all day long. And what I mean by three technique, they play on the outside, or excuse me, where's the three technique? Inside shade of the guard, head up over the guard. Like, that's the type of D lineman we have. We need the space-eating, double-team-eating war daddy in the middle of this Washington Commanders defense. And I have a little bit of an inkling we can get that in the draft. A little bit of an inkling that we can end up with that in the NFL draft. Johnny Newton, I know I've been pretty critical of him. I hope and pray he takes a step forward. I really do. Because this class is so damn good that he may be an afterthought after the guys that Washington ultimately brings in. Right now, I want to get to my conversation, part one, with JP Acosta of SB Nation. Right now, we go out to the Rude Guest Hotline, where we find one of my absolute favorites talking all things NFL draft. Our guy, JP Acosta from SB Nation. You can read his work at SBNation.com and give him a follow on the X app at Acosta32_JP. What's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. We're about to get into the real the real meat of the NFL draft season with the combine approaching, pro days. It feels like everything's starting to really blur together.
For sure. Quite literally, we will get into the meat, the biggins in this class. We'll talk some offensive line. We'll talk some defensive line. I think I want to start there, JP, because relative to the local hometown squad, the Washington Commanders, they have a bevy of needs in the trenches on both sides of the football. I want to start with defense. Can I read you a quote from someone that I heard last night, someone I trust that does this thing pretty regularly, talking about cover the draft? He described this year's defensive line class, JP, as a gold mine. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Absolutely. I think specifically the defensive tackle class, but this defensive line class is one of the deepest groups that I've seen in my time scouting and really focusing on the NFL draft. There's just so many different varieties of bodies and how they play the game at different levels. You know, you got your three techs who are more pass rush types, like Omar Norman Lott from Tennessee.
Love him.
Darius Alexander from Toledo is a little more of that mold. TJ Sanders from South Carolina is also in that body type. And then you have more of the pocket pusher, nose tackle, one techs. who will play a little bit more of a role in stopping the run, like Kenneth Grant, you're like Jamari Caldwell from Oregon. And then going out to the edge, there's so many different varieties of how players win and how they want to win. And I think the proliferation of like the tight front and the mid front, the stuff that Georgia runs on their defense, it's helped change college football defensive structure, but it's also changed how we scout and how we approach these prospects coming in who played in that defense, because they're not exactly doing the exact same stuff that the NFL is going to ask them to do.
JP, I want to ask you for some names here, and I agree 100% with what you said. There are different flavors when it comes to the type of defensive linemen, specifically on the interior. A couple of names, JP, in that day two range, if you're talking about kind of like 33 to 60 in terms of some guys that could be plug-and-play starters on day one on the defensive line, specifically on the interior.
So on the interior, I think a guy like Darius Alexander makes a lot of sense from Toledo. Mm-hmm. He's a fifth-year senior, going to be 24, 25 years old after the draft, so he's a little bit of an older prospect, but his rise since the Senior Bowl has been
crazy,
astronomical. He is such a explosive pass rusher with a variety of moves, and we've seen it. He's a really good athlete. If you search Darius Alexander's name in social media, you're going to find a pick six where he caught the interception and sprinted straight into the end zone. He's a guy that I think is going to be a more of a day two prospect, but watching him on tape, it was an easy eval. Plug and play, three technique. I think Omar Norman Lott from Tennessee is also in that same area. I think he's a little more undersized than Alexander. Alexander's more around the 305, 310 range, and Omar Norman Lott's going to float around 295. But if you're looking for a clone of a guy like Dallas's free agent Osa Digizua, I think Omar Norman Lott is the same type of player when it comes to explosiveness and lateral quickness from the interior. I think that he's a guy that makes so much sense for teams that run like a 4-3 or a 4-2-5 and want to get some more explosive pocket pushing and verticality from their pass rush on the interior. Those are a couple guys.
Yeah.
That I really like. And then another name that I think is going to start to rise really quickly is Jamari Caldwell from Oregon.
Yeah.
He's
the better of the two. I'm calling my shot. He's the better of the two.
Yeah, he's an incredible athlete. They had at Houston, he transferred from Houston to Oregon. He was playing out at 5-tech and doing spin moves out of Houston and then moved him to nose at Oregon. You will see him run down running backs in the run game. He makes a lot of plays as a pass rusher. He's immediate plug and play. He's going to be a quality starter at nose tackle or at 1-tech for your team.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next. Kind of, I guess he's a name that fits that bill. Just sort of those guys, man. How deep, I guess, is what I should ask here. Do you get into this draft before you stop with the plug-and-play starters at that position? I guess I'm saying, how late do you think a team like Washington can go out and get a starting one of those nose tackle type of guys that also has a little bit of pass rush juice as well? They're looking for a space eater.
I think the lowest you're probably going to get one of those guys, it's probably around day three, early day three, around round four. Because once you get into day three, you get to the rounds five, six, and seven, you're taking more swings on guys that might have the athletic potential, but just have not put it together as prospects. I think that you're going to see a lot of guys, because this defensive tackle class is really deep, you might see a run where they go flying off the board early, and that pushes a lot of guys up the board. I think a Deion Walker from Kentucky is going to get pushed up the board, as is Cam Jackson, because they are two mammoth human beings. But I think you're going to see around round four, I think going into maybe round five, that it starts to peter out a little bit.
For sure. I want to ask you about some of the edge rush options in this class as well. That's another part of this that makes it super deep. I was looking at the combine invites, and I mean, it just seems like there are more defensive linemen that have been invited this year relative to years past. A good amount of them come on the edge. Looking at things through the prism of the Commanders right now, JP, if you were Washington and you were looking to find a stout guy at the point of attack playing the run that is an edge guy, who is your favorite in the class in Washington's draft range in that 29 area? And then if they want to go second round, day two guy, someone in that area as well.
So I think I start with what Washington wants on the edge in terms of stout at the point of attack in the run game. I start with Texas A&M's Nick Scorton.
Yeah.
And he had a little bit of an odd year this season. Texas A&M switched from a very 4-2-5, what you traditionally see in the NFL, a lot of their edges playing wide nines to more of a tight mid front that you see a lot in college football, where they had Nick Scorton, who played at 265 at Purdue, bulk all the way up to 285 to try and play inside. And you could just see some of the speed and some of the burst kind of left. So I wonder what he's going to weigh in at in the combine, what he tests like, because if you look at the Purdue tape, he is such an explosive and powerful pass rusher. You saw bits and pieces of that at Texas A&M, but largely I felt like his body sort of let him down a little bit because of all the extra weight. So he might be a guy that falls to the end of the first round area, beginning of the second, that I think would make a lot of sense for Washington in terms of what they want from their edges, like you said. The next two, I think, are the Ohio State players, Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau. I think Sawyer is the better of them because I think he offers a little bit more pass rush upside. But both guys are incredibly stout at point of attack, want to play the run first on the way to the pass. I think Tuimoloau is a little – I think both of them are a little stiff when it comes to rushing the passer, not very fluid. But I think Sawyer is going to be a guy that you're going to see stick around for a long time in the NFL, just being productive. And, you know, he bats a lot of passes and clearly was the team leader for that Ohio State team that won national championship. Those are two guys that I think would be really good in terms of stopping the run from the edge. And then I think once you get into day three, you get to a guy like Elijah Roberts from SMU. I think he is going to be another guy that kind of rises with the draft process, but he's another really interesting player, and SMU was not the greatest defensively, but he made a lot of splash plays, really caught my eye. So Elijah Roberts is another guy that I think would be really nice.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It's going to be an interesting class. I was saying it to a buddy earlier, like Washington, the football gods are on their side. In terms of their needs entering this offseason, between free agency and the draft, they have a really, really big opportunity, JP, to fill a good chunk of those. And you got a chance to get the core of your roster a lot younger as well. Joined right now by JP Acosta, who covers the draft for SB Nation. Give him a follow on the Twitter app at Acosta underscore JP32. I want to look at the cornerback class here real quickly, JP. Washington definitely in the market for another corner. I would say preferably someone to go on the outside. I think they would like to bump Mikey Samuels still back inside to that nickel. When you look at guys that are physical, man-to-man, bigger corners like Dan Quinn likes on the outside, at 29 in particular, who do you like? And do you think there's good value there to get a plug-and-play starter?
The first guy I think of there is Florida State corner Azariah Thomas. He's
flying up the boards.
He is what you want as a press corner. 6'2", long arms, incredibly productive. He was the best player on a Florida State team that did not have very much talent this season, but he shows a lot of ball skills, a lot of instincts. I think he's a little thin, but not – I know when I say a little thin, Washington fans are going to think Emmanuel Forbes, but this is not – not Emmanuel Forbes thin, but he's a little on the thinner side, but I think that he's such an incredibly productive and physical player despite his size. I mean, Renardo Green, who played really well for San Francisco this year, Jarian Jones played well for the Jaguars in the slot. They both said Azariah Thomas was the best corner of the three while he was still at Florida State. Okay. And I think that they're pretty correct. The next guy that I think would make a lot of sense there is Benjamin Morrison. And Morrison's a little bit of a weird eval, hurt his hip, was out the rest of the season at Notre Dame, and I don't know what the extent of the hip injury is, and I don't know if that's going to hurt his ability to test at the combine. But when he's healthy, he showed a lot of potential, a lot of promise as a man corner. Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame play a lot of man coverage, a lot of cover one. They will leave those guys on an island, and I think his physicality will make a lot of sense there. And then the last guy, also coming off an injury, is Siobhan Rebel Jr. from East Carolina. I also don't think he's going to test in Indy, but he's an athletic marvel. He's got great instincts, got a couple of pick sixes, I believe, in his career. And he wants to be on that island. He has a lot of great makeup speed, and he trusts his speed in man coverage downfield.
Big thank you to our guy, JP Acosta. That is going to do it here for this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. You've been tapped in to the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. Big thank you to Chris Russell. Big thank you to our producer, Metal Chris. Thank you for all of your calls. The Infinity Sports Network comes your way next. You can hear me tomorrow sitting in 4 to 7 over on our sister station, the Team 980.